And tonight, we've got 22 years of sobriety. Sonny has his home group is the Saturday night step study, 8 o'clock. And I won't tell you who his sponsor is. He's going to probably fill you in on all that. But really look forward to it. Here's Sonny, and let's give him a warm welcome.
My name is Sonny Walker, and I'm an alcoholic. I was going to read out the big book, but Tim read what I was going to read, so I won't bother with that. I have 23 years sobriety. My birthday is December the 25th, 1985, Christmas Day. And that's my real birthday. And my sponsor is Bob Meadows, if you know Bob Meadows. Been my sponsor for about 22 of those years, I think. Now, the Saturday night step study I was sentenced to by Bob, and that was to keep me off the street on Saturday nights when I first got there. I live in Conyers now, so I don't come to this meeting or to this club much anymore. Since Bob got sick, I've been coming, trying to get him on Tuesdays and bring him to a meeting, and probably it for Bob in the meetings. I don't know if he'll be back to one or not. He was here Saturday night, but he didn't last long. Anyway. It's been a long time since I've told my story. First time I sold it, I was 30 days sober and told it in a little room over here. And then at 90 days sober, I told it again. You wouldn't have think it was the same person telling this story. I cleared up a little bit. Fred was in the treatment when they brought me in the night they brought me in, so he could, if you want to know what I look like, he can verify that. I'm going to try to share my experience, strength, and hope, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Hopefully I'll spend a lot of time on what it's like now. I have to qualify myself. I am a drunk. I don't know that anybody else in this room is a drunk. I don't know that. I know that I'm a drunk. And it doesn't matter how much I drank or when I drank or how I did it. I met a lady in these rooms that had gotten drunk one time. And she said she had always swore after seeing her parents stay drunk that she would never get drunk. When she got drunk, she came to AA. And she said, I'm alcoholic enough for me. And I'm alcoholic enough for me. There's an old joke about a drunk goes into court. He's charged with drunken disorderly and setting his bed on fire. And the judge said, how do you plead? He said, well, Your Honor, said, I'll plead guilty to that drunk charge, but that damn bed was on fire when I got in it. And that's not my story. My story is I came out of a blackout Christmas morning. My bed was in the front yard, still smoking. I didn't remember going to bed, setting it on fire, or the fire department being there, or anything. I didn't even remember the night. I remember having a party that night, and I drank a quart of wild turkey and had a shot of tequila that everybody came in the door. I'd have a shot of Jose Cuervo with them. Sometime during the night, I laid down in bed and set the bed on fire with a cigarette. Somehow, my wife at the time woke up and got us all out of the house, got the fire department there, got the bed put out. What I remember is waking up, kind of coming out of the blackout in my living room, had my wife sitting on my lap, and I'm crying, saying, if I quit drinking, will you still love me? My wife didn't love me anyway. That was done. It was over with. In fact, 6 months in the program, our divorce was final. But in that living room, a little voice I heard was, Daddy, I'll still love you. And that was my little daughter that was sitting there. I was divorced from her mother. My wife left to take her home, and while she was gone, I started calling people and said, I need some help. I don't know what to do. I know something's wrong. I always knew something was wrong. I said, but I just can't go on anymore. I need some help. My brother came over. He said, yeah, you got a hangover. you know, how you overreact. You just sober up and everything's going to be all right. Called somebody else, my brother-in-law. He came over. Same story. I had three or four people come over. So I called a guy where I worked, had an employee assistance program. And I, for some reason, I had enough sense that I called this guy. He came over to the house. I said, something's wrong with me. And he talked to me a little while and said, you're right, something's wrong with you. I think I know what it is. If you'll pack a shaving kit, we're going to go somewhere. So he took me up to Peachford Hospital. No, Parkwood Hospital. I don't remember details real good. I usually have to ask Bob how many years I've been sober. Took me up to Parkwood. I had no idea I was going into a treatment center. I didn't know what was going on. I was scared to death, and that's where I ended up. 10 days later, I was in over the holidays, so they never set up a treatment program for me. And 10 days later, they took me in to the head doctor. He came back from the holidays, and the guy that was there with me said, his insurance has run out. So he just closed my folder and said, you got to go. So I agreed to go to outpatient therapy, you know, and paying for it myself. And then I just ended up over here at Napa. And that's how I got sober. Got sober in this 11 o'clock meeting, going to a lot of meetings. They say go to 90 and 90. I probably went to 500 and 500. I was scared to death if I missed a meeting that I'd end up drunk again. And I did all the wrong things. You know, the first thing you hear when you come into this room is, rarely have we seen a person fail that's thoroughly followed our path. Well, I'm living proof. I haven't thoroughly done anything. But I've done it to the best of my ability. And my belief is, if you work the steps to the best of your ability, then you can't stop this program from working in your life. It will work. And it'll continue working. I was taught that. I don't hear a lot of things I used to hear around here. There used to be some pretty tough nuts in these rooms. I mean, they just tell you real fast. Say, you know, why don't you go get drunk? You know, if you're miserable, if you don't think you're an alcoholic, if you're debating shit, go get drunk. They tell you, the big book tells us that. Go on, get out of here. I'm one that never, ever attempted to stop drinking till the day I stopped. Never had a desire, never changed the scotch to try to quit or swap. Now, I did change the scotch, and I changed the vodka, and I changed the bourbon, but not to quit drinking. I never considered stop drinking until the day I quit drinking. It was one of them deals. It didn't compute with me. I was arrested and went to jail for the first time at 15 years old down at the varsity. And I was arrested for drinking. Nothing else. Drinking. Went to jail. Back then, you had to, if you were a juvenile, I had to go back to jail for the next 4 weekends. And that was, I guess, to teach you a lesson. Then I was put on probation for 6 months. It didn't affect me. Nothing ever affected me. I went to jail. I was in the service. I was in jail in every country I was in. One of Bob's favorite stories he likes to tell them about me, I went to Hawaii 6 times and they never let me off the ship because I was on restriction every time we got to Hawaii, because when we left the States, they had trouble getting me to go with them. But eventually, you know, I would show up. They sometimes would have to fly me onto that aircraft carrier. It didn't affect me. I mean, drinking, everybody I had no role models growing up. Everybody I knew drank. And I really, really did not know anybody that didn't drink. I mean, I grew up in a drinking home. Grew up with a stepdaddy that didn't like me. And I was pretty sure he didn't like me. By the way, he beat the hell out of me most times. And later in life, after I got sober, when we reconciled all this, he told me, I didn't like you. I said, well, I kind of figured that out early. But I ran away from home when I was 16, and I didn't go back. I mean, hell, I went out and got me a job and was drinking and having a good time. I worked at a junkyard, a salvage yard today. Back then there were junkyards. And I lived in a one little room up above that junkyard called the Sugar Shack. And I was perfectly happy. I mean, I was a lot happier than I had been at home. But why I ran away from home, because I got caught doing something. I got caught laying out of school as usual. I had a girlfriend, and in fact, she lived up here pretty close to where this club was. And I grew up in Forest Park. And instead of going to school, I would come up here, and her mother worked during the day, and we would just kind of hang around her bedroom all day. And I got caught, and I just said, well, that's it. I'm not going to go back home and take another beating. So I just went out and went to work. Got to do what I wanted to do. Got to drink what I wanted to drink. I don't know. I hear a lot of people say, oh, I was a drunk the first minute I took a drink. I don't think it was like that with me. When I read Bill W.'s story, I couldn't really relate until it got to the part where he said, gradually it got worse. And I had a lot of good times. And my type of fun, you know, wasn't the right type. I wouldn't want my son doing what I was doing. But I was having a lot of fun doing, again, what I wanted to do. Talked my mother into signing for me to go into the Navy when I was 17. The day before I left, I was in court telling the judge, if you'll just let me go one more time, I'll be in the Navy tomorrow. And back then, that's what they did. You know, instead of sending you to prison, they'd say, you go join the Army or the Navy. That's how you got at it. Best thing ever happened to me. Now, I stayed drunk the whole time I was in the Navy, and I was in, like I say, I was in jail in every port we were in. And it wasn't for anything but drinking. I mean, I wasn't burglarizing, killing, raping. I was just drinking. And I mean, we used to go into a bar and what we'd say, we're going to John Wayne this damn place. And that's kind of how it turned out. And, you know, I'd usually end up in jail. I was out there with John McCain when he got shot down. He was on the Oriskany and I was on the Coral Sea. I was in an A4 tax squadron just like him. I didn't know that till he started running for president, and I started backing the dates up and looking when I was there. And when he said he was on the Oriskany, I said, shoot, I was out there with the Oriskany. But John wasn't doing the same thing I was doing. Again, I was a drunk. I was doing the best I knew how to do and going along. And I would go out. I remember I was stationed in Jacksonville, and I would go out and get drunk at night. Then I would go to the libraries and read psychology books. And the whole time I would be thinking, something's wrong with me. I know something's wrong with me. I don't know what it is. But there's something that I don't seem to be like these other people. I mean, they're having fun, and even my last day being drunk, I told my wife, I said, I can be with 100 people, and I feel like I'm alone. And I always felt that way. It had always been that way. Have a few drinks, though, and things change. I don't know what that did to me, but it made me not think about it so much anyway. And I had a good time. Again, I never attempted to stop drinking until the day I quit. My sister was in AA, and she had talked to me, and I was like, you know, you hear the jokes. I mean, she'd come to my house and say, you're an alcoholic. I mean, here, have a drink. You need a drink. Again, I grew up. I never I never considered not drinking. On the way up here, I was thinking about, I got out of the Navy and came home, and we went to an old bar called the Sit and Sip out in Lakewood. And there was five or six guys that night with me, five guys with me. And we got drunk, and I think we got in a fight over the pickled hog feet. Sponsor recalling me. Anyway, we got in a fight, and what I was thinking about tonight, we left that bar, I was driving, I wrecked the car, we took off on foot, and a guy by the name of Larry Walker, and a little while, he disappeared, and he pulled up in a new Buick with a six-pack that he had found. Found a car sitting in the driveway with the keys in it with a six-pack sitting in the floorboard. So he took me to the hospital because I had my thumb was dislocated and, you know, all the stuff that goes along with that. But what I was thinking tonight, that was me and my brother. My brother is a dead drunk. He's out in Oregon now. He's still drunk. He's still whooping around, and he's still having a good time. But all them other guys are dead. One was killed in a car wreck coming back to Panama City, drunk. One was shot and killed. One died in an alley in East Point, drunk, a street drunk. Another one committed suicide after he had been shot up so bad he couldn't walk or anything anymore. So he ended his life. So me and my brother is the only one left. My brother's still a drunk, and God bless him. You know, he's tried the program. He's been in treatments, but he just never took with him. That kind of qualifies. I mean, I was a drunk. I was arrested. I was arrested one time in California for drunken quarreling. And what happened, I got to a curb, and I couldn't get up on that damn curb. So I had to get down, and I had my bottle, and set it up on that sidewalk, and crawled up to it. And that was kind of the way. I didn't have but 13 miles to go when they caught me. But I was setting that bottle out in front of me and crawling up to it. And then I would set it out there again and crawling up to it again. I was the next day I was kind of glad they had caught me. Because there's no telling where I ended up. But just a lot of stuff like that. I mean, I got locked up for some of the damnedest foolish things. I was locked up three times for DUI in 1 month in the same old city, Hateville. And all the judge said that third one was, where was you at last week? I said, well, I was here. Y'all just didn't catch me. But again, that had no impact. Back then, you could just go in, pay you $250, and go about your way. Had no impact. Never considered slowing down. Never considered anything. Because that's what I did. And another thing, after I threw a good drunk, I always felt better. Now, I don't know what it did, but it took some kind of pressure off of me. I always felt better. Well, the morning I set my bed on fire, you know, I knew what we used to say, the jig was up. That I was, whatever it was, I was done. I was at the end. Or now I say the beginning. I didn't know what was wrong. I knew nothing about alcoholism, and most of us don't. I mean, the majority of us grew up around booze. I didn't know anything about it. It's kind of like God. When I got here, everybody talked about being an agnostic, atheist. I wasn't an atheist. I wasn't an agnostic. I was indifferent. I didn't care. I didn't care about quitting drinking. I wanted my life to go along and, you know, just to do the things I did and try to be a little bit happy. I remember sitting down with me and my wife, last wife, doing budgets, and we always budgeted the booze would go in first. You know, never considered, I mean, really never considered cutting that out. We would cut out food. And I remember telling her, I said, do you ever stop to think, this was in the end of my drinking, I mean, something was happening, I was beginning to figure this stuff out. Did you ever stop to think, I said, whenever we've had a fight, either you were drunk, I were drunk, or we were both drunk, she says, yeah, I know, but and I like to drink. And I'm not about to quit. And I said, well, that sounds right. I don't want to quit either. But there in the end, that night, I set the bed on fire. Because it was lucky it didn't kill everybody. The house full of smoke. And how she woke up, I don't know. Because she was a hard sleeper, never woke up. And I was in blackout. And she woke up. She had a son. My daughter was there. And she woke us up and got us out of the house. But that was enough for me. I knew I could have killed them. And why I didn't kill them, I don't know. When they took me into the hospital, I had a picture of that. Did they take a picture of you, Fred, when you went in? They used to take a picture of you when you come in, man. And later, I looked at that picture. I thought I was looking good back in those days. But, man, I was a rough-looking sight. So coming to this program, I knew nothing. I didn't know, you know, anything about alcoholism, how to do this, how to do anything. But I was scared. I came in here and I was scared. And I just knew if I didn't get this thing, I had a vision. And just as plain as day, I could see myself as a lonely old drunk sitting in the bar on that same old bar stool I've been sitting on for years. And I saw it just as plain as day. And I was scared to death. And that kept me sober for a long time, just on fear. I'm one of these people that got worse when I got to the program. Emotionally and mentally, I got worse. Took the booze away. I had nothing to buffer whatever was going on inside of me. I remember I would close my door and close my blinds at work. And I'd lay on the floor in a fetal position and just shake and cry. I'd sit in the back of the room back there and just cry. I couldn't talk. And just, you know, try to hang on one more day, one more day. Tim asked me about Tar Club tonight. I had been to 5 meetings one Saturday up here. Started that morning, went on through. Left here, and I knew I was going to be drunk before I got home. And instead, I stopped at the Tar Club in Hagel. And walked in, sat down, started crying. The guy just handed me the big book and told me whatever page the promises is on, read the promises. And again, the program worked. And after that, every time I'd go to a meeting, somebody'd ask me to read the promises. And that went on for a long time. And it's just magical things happened for me. I picked a good sponsor. My first sponsor, I had a lot of relationship problems. The time I got the program, I'd been married 3 times. One wife, I don't even remember her last name. I brought her home from California with me, and we were in my mother's house, and my mother said, y'all can't keep staying here without being married, so we went and got married. She was gone within a few months, and I don't even remember her last name. I really don't. Married the second time, and then the third time. Finally, in sobriety, I kind of figured out, you keep married, this girl was a go-go dancer from California. Probably been a stripper today, but back then it was just go-go dancing. My second wife was a bartender. And my third wife worked for me, and I married her. But anyway, it kind of, in sobriety, I kind of figured that out. If you keep marrying bartenders and strippers, and then you probably, you know, it's not going to be a successful marriage. I am married today to a lady that's got, I think she has 22 years, 21 or 22 years in the program. I met her at the Biscayne Room, danced her first sober dance with her. 4 years later, we started dating and got married, when we've had a very happy marriage. Have two kids, 16-year-old boy and a 14-year-old girl. I consider it my only successful marriage. First woman, period, dating or otherwise, that I've ever been true to in my whole life is my wife today. And again, everything I have today I attribute to this program. That's where it started. Everything. Can't think of anything that didn't start. And I still have, you know, like my stepson from my previous marriage, I still have a relationship with him. But everything good in my, well, everything in my life started at this program. Me getting sober. Trying to work this program to the best of my ability. Trying to work these steps in my life. I was telling, excuse me, someone before the meeting, my wife and I have, we've been married 17 years now. We've never had a fight. We've had some tense moments, but we've never had a fight. And a lot of, most of it has to do with this program. I take care of my side of the street, and she takes care of hers. And besides that, I know it's always me that's the problem. And there's no doubt about that. People, not the one person here that knows my wife, and that's Fred, but my wife is an angel. We talk about Bob Meadows. My wife held Bob's baby when it died. And they took it off the life support. She sang to that baby for an hour and cuddled it and held it because Bob and Patty couldn't go in the room with it. My wife is an angel. I like to quote my wife, and this is how my life is. My wife said, "I'm living the life I've always dreamed about." And that's kind of how our life is. Now, we're just like everybody else. You know, we have, Joe Lewis used to sit over here and say, "If you don't have any problems, I'll give you some of mine." But we've been blessed. I quit working about 10, 11, 12 years ago. I don't know. My kids have never seen me work. Get up and go to work. Not quite sure how I've done that. And if the stock market keeps going like it's going, I'm sure I'm going to have to go get me a Walmart job, a greeter job or something. But good things have happened to me in this program. And I've been a professional volunteer for the last 10, 12 years. My wife and I are on the board of directors of Little League Baseball and have been for 10 years. I facilitated a grief and loss group at Unity Church for about 7 years, and I gave that up. And what has happened, as Bill W. said, the purpose of AA is to return us to the mainstream of society. Now, I don't know if I was ever in the mainstream, but I am in the mainstream of society now. My friend Bob likes to say, character is what you are when nobody's looking. And Bob Meadows has character, I guarantee you that. And I try to live my life. I have a lot of role models in AA that I didn't have growing up or people I hung out with. But in AA, I have a lot of role models. I didn't start out that way. I came into AA and I had a relationship problem. So I picked a sponsor that had been married 6 times to help me with the relationships. Found out later he really didn't like women a lot. And it was suggested to me, maybe you ought to pick a sponsor that's been married for 30 years. If you want to know how to work a relationship. I was not good on relationships. And here's how God has worked in my life. until I surrender completely, God has always, always, drunk, sober, given me everything I've asked for. I'd say, God, I want a good relationship, and that's the girl I want it with. And God would usually do that for me. He'd give me that girl. Now, that might be the sickest person ever walked in the room. But that's kind of how I ran my life. After a few years of sobriety, of going through a lot of bad relationships, one night I sat down and I was taught to write things down early in sobriety, and I still write things down to get them out of my head. But I, for the first time in my life, wrote down what I wanted in a woman. And I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know you could ask for what you wanted. I wrote it all down, put it in an envelope, threw it in a drawer, got out on my knees and said, God, I proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that I don't know a damn thing about relationships and that I am continuously picking the wrong person for me. So here's what I'll do. I'm going to turn that over to you, and I'm going to try my best not to take it back. And if you'll bring the right person along, I'll try to pay attention. And that's how my wife came into my life. And it started out here in the lobby. She asked me to go to a play with her one night. And to hear her tell it, I was a safe date. I think she was just smitten with me. But the way she tells the story, I was a safe date, and she knew she could go to a play with me and it wouldn't be any problems. And that's where it took off. And that's kind of how God works in my life. When I finally get to the point where I can really, really just turn it over to God, things begin to work for me. My life is absolutely wonderful. Again, I like to say, my wife says it, that's her phrase, I'm living the life I always dreamed about. All I do is go to AA meetings, get up, piddle around the house. I'm a gardener. I piddle with things. I'm one of the directors of the high school baseball program, so I was messing with the high school website today, and that's kind of how I spend my days, just fooling around. I don't know if I said my wife's down in West Palm Beach visiting, and my son and daughter's at a pizza place, and I have all the trust in the world that they'll do the right thing and be home. My children have never seen me drunk, and that's one thing I'm really proud of. I grew up in a home, and I tell them about this. I've seen my daddy's break my mother's nose. I've seen my mother stab my daddy. I grew up in a household where the police were out there usually once a month because the neighbors were hearing everything in the house being broken up. And they would call them. My kids have never seen their parents fight. They've never seen booze in the house. They've never seen drugs in the house. And for that, I'm grateful. And as long as I keep doing what I've been doing, I hope I'll keep getting what I've been getting. I don't have an exciting story, a very dull story, and then Tim set me up against the president tonight anyway, so it's not equal competition there. But I want everybody to know, when I first got here, I thought I was going to have to drink again. I heard all these people talking about relapses and slips, and I just thought that was part of the deal. So I was working real hard to set myself up for that. I was going to bars on Saturday nights because I was lonely. And I never drank one night in a bar. And I knew if I kept doing it, I was going. That's when Bob, like I said, Bob sentenced me to that step meeting to keep me out of the bars on Saturday. Because he knew what I was doing too. This thing has been an evolution. I don't think about drinking at all anymore except when I come to an AA meeting. I never, ever think about drinking or drugging. My mother just died in November. And I told my brother I was kind of upset, and he knows I'm sober. I mean, I took him to hospitals and treatment centers, and he rolled me a couple joints and brought them to me. So here, you relax. Take it easy. But again, that's just the way he approaches things. Funny story about him, we were in the hospital one night, and he said, I know I'm seeing things, but there's slugs climbing out from between my toes. And I looked at the nurse and said, if you'll go get me a salt shaker, we'll take care of them jokers. He stayed in there at that place, GNR or something. He stayed out there for 90 days, got sober, and he was out about 10 days drunk again. And that's okay. It's not my way. And I couldn't do it. I don't know how he does it. I really don't. His wife's kind of got him calmed down. He's only drinking beer, and he's not allowed to come back to Georgia by himself anymore. Because he gets here, he gets on a drunk, man. And he gets on that crystal meth, and he's a wild man for about a month, and she has to come. When I drank, I had a little house down in Florida, a little fishing village called Steinahatchee, Florida. I used to go down there, and they would have to send people to get me, bring me back. I'd get down there and get drunk. I remember calling my wife from Key West and saying, I've gone as far south to get away from you as I can damn get, and I'm getting on a boat now to keep going. And then again, that's just the way I did things. You know, I just never thought anything was wrong with that. Never thought that if somebody had to come and get me to bring me back home from Florida, that anything was wrong with that. I mean, we fished about the first day, and after that, would, you know, I remember the second day, I was sitting in the restaurant, and that lady who run that restaurant said, man, you look bad. Let me fix you a Bloody Mary. We never made it to the boat that day. You know, we went from one place to another, they kept fixing this Bloody Mary, just keep on going all day. That was my life. Again, when I got here, I woke up that morning, went into treatment. 10 days later, I got out. Came over to Nava, and I came here every day. I came here every morning. I worked nights back then. I worked second shift, and I came here and do that night back then. I don't know what time it is now, but it's 9 o'clock meeting back then, and I do the night, have breakfast. Back then, we had a full restaurant. And have breakfast every morning, go to the 9 o'clock meeting, go to the 11 o'clock meeting, have lunch, go to work. Day in and day out. And I needed it. I don't know how many meetings you need. That's what I needed. I don't think I missed a meeting the first 5 years. Because I was scared if I did, I would be drunk. I was literally afraid. Everything anybody suggested, go to the Atlanta Men's Workshop. I'm going. I'm there. I went there every spring and every fall for years. I bought all the tapes. I listened to the tapes. I did everything that was suggested to me, and I worked the steps the best of my ability. My first attempt of doing that fifth step was at Rock Eagle at the men's workshop with Bob. We went down the woods, and I did my fifth step, and as we're coming out of the woods, I just said, Bob, when can we get together again? Let me tell you the rest of it. Because I just couldn't get honest that first time. After that, I went with a guy to West Palm Beach. He's not here tonight. I thought Jim would be here. But we went every year for about 9 years. And we did a fourth and fifth step every year at West Palm Beach. It was last week of February, the first week of March. Now, normally, I mean, we've usually just laying on the beach and in the last day writing real fast, you know. But we did that every year just to clean house, just to keep things cleaned out. Because what I found out in this program is this stuff slips up on me. It gets in my mind. And if I don't get it out, it has an effect. I never knew that until I got to the program. But what I found out was burnt into my brain is every bad thing I've ever done in my life. Everything. Everything. There wasn't any good up there. There wasn't nothing telling me I'd done anything good. Every bad thing I had ever done. And that was just part of that whatever it was inside of me that made me so long and not whole, maybe that's what you want to call it. And it took a long time in this program to find out you got to mark up with the good with the bad. So most of my stuff these days, the 10th step is, you know, I had a 10th step form. I don't know if y'all have ever seen one. I had 4-step forms. I had forms for everything because I couldn't, unless I put it on paper, I couldn't do an inventory at night. I had to write down every night. Well, I did this okay and that okay. And it took me a long time. I spent a few years in therapy. Found out why I was like I was. I was still like I was. And again, Bob used to say, you know, you sober a horse thief up, he keeps stealing horses, all you have is a sober horse thief. Till you start trying to change. You start doing things differently. And a funny thing happens. When you do things, somehow you change. Even if you don't believe in it, if you just follow the steps and try to do it the best of your ability, things begin to change. Now, I don't know how this program works. I'll never know how it works. I know it works, though. I know I've been sober and never taken a drink. I look around the room, and Fred could do, I could fill up every seat in this room that people that have gone out and never made it back. We were in the lobby talking tonight about past presidents that got drunk and never made it back. My sister has been here. She was here 5 years when I got here. She got drunk and took her about 15 years to get back. She died sober. But, man, she went through a lot before she got back to getting sober. I walked the easier, softer way, and that's the way it is today. The easier, softer way is if you don't pick up that first drink. I know, and I don't know why other people know. I've always known I have the ability to be drunk before I get home tonight. I know that. I know it's in me. I have no doubt, and maybe that has, you know, helped keep me sober. I try to work these steps the best way I'm able to do. Do I consciously get up every day after 23 years and say, all right, I'm working on step 3? Hell no, I don't. My life is such today is I just don't get into the messes I used to get into. I don't have a lot of stuff to clean up, except with my family. When I'm being an ass at home, that's the only thing I kind of have to clean up. After I got off the phone with my son tonight, I thought, you know, I should have told him how proud I am of him for coming and getting his sister and taking her with him tonight. And I'll tell him that when I get home. I should have done that. After 5 years of sobriety, I got a call from this little girl that had said the morning, Daddy, I still love you, had killed herself. She was 16, and I don't know why that happened. But I know I was surrounded by people from AA. I was in a meeting that night, and I kept doing the things I had been doing because I knew if I didn't, there was no hope for me. I remember standing in the funeral home being surrounded by people from AA, and we linked up in a circle and we said the serenity prayer in the lobby of that funeral home. I didn't connect with the other people there at the time. I remember telling my wife, she wasn't my wife at the time, I said, don't let anybody sedate me because I don't want to wake up one day wondering why I'm still hurting and not know why anymore. Because I know what this disease will do and I know what the alcohol and the different things will do. I'm very, very happy today. I consider my life a success today. And I started this off saying that morning was the end, or maybe it was the beginning. It was the beginning of life as I know it today. And I just have a good time. I really do, all the time. My kids get embarrassed by how silly I am sometimes, as old as I am. Lights are blinking off telling me it's time to go. It's rolling telling me it's time to cut it off. But anyway, I don't know how much sobriety you have in this room. Other than Henry and Fred and myself, there's not a lot of really, really old-timers. I mean, I'm not an old-timer. When I sit with Bill Roop, I just consider myself a rookie, you know. I brought this with me just for comfort. I like to have it with me. Read the big book. Work the steps to the best of your ability. You don't have to do this thing perfect. The only one you got to do perfect, don't put that first drink in your mouth. I wanted to drink. The book says there'll come a time that the only thing that stands between you and a drink is your spiritual condition. And I think every meeting you go to puts a little money in the bank there for that spiritual condition. It's going to come. I promise you it will come. And it will come more than once. Because life goes on. Things happen. Shit happens. I say my friend Bobby, you know, he's dying. He's got a few days left. I've seen him lost his baby, his wife, mother, and sister within a year of each other. And he keeps on keeping on. Man has character. I've seen a lot of people pass over in this program. I don't think anybody besides Fred in this room remembers Dick Hickey. He died of, you remember Dick? He died of throat cancer. Henry does. Oh, yeah, you and Dick are big buddies. We had a picture of Dick right before he died. And if you looked at his face, he was more serene when he died than he was 10 years before that, if you looked at the picture. We had meetings at the hospital and did different things and died sober. I hope to die sober. Again, I don't have an exciting story. I was just a drunk, just a run-of-the-mill drunk. Nothing different. Drank a lot of booze, had a lot of good times. It ran out on me. You know, Father Noel, if any of you remember Father Noel, used to say, God doesn't want us to be holy, He wants us to be healed. And I think through being healed, we become whole. And thus maybe we become holy. I do feel whole today. I don't remember. I really can't remember the last time I felt that feeling, that emptiness inside of me. I don't remember. It's been so long. And that's a great feeling to have. They ask most people, what would you like to have in life? Peace. And the book says we will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. And I do know peace. Thank you for having me tonight.
Thank you, Sonny. That's Sonny. Send a tradition every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, donations support the group in AA at Zone. And I've asked Leslie to hand out the chips.